Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and parents and educators and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine, analyze various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Even before COVID-19, the state of teens' mental health had worsened over the past decade. Adolescence is a unique and formative time. Multiple factors affect mental health. Physical, social, and emotional changes, including poverty, abuse, and violence, can make adolescents vulnerable to mental health problems. Emotional disorders are common among adolescents. Through the lens of Jennifer Licati's new book, My Anxiety is Messing Up, designed for ages 9 to 14, we explore the growing crisis of children's mental health. Licati offers a powerful tool for parents, teachers, and children themselves. Jennifer, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to talking with you. You know, we hear that childhood anxiety is increasing nationwide. From your perspective, as a counselor, what's driving this rise?
I think there's a lot of factors driving the rise. As you mentioned before, the pandemic was a very scary time that today's teens lived through. So that was a time period that really probably shaped for them a fear base of knowing that you don't always have a predictability in the world. So that increased some anxiety. Social media increases the anxiety in teens because they're seeing what everyone else is doing. They are never having a time to just be at home by themselves. They're always can be contacted by other teens or see what the other teens are doing and know what they're missing out on and know what they're not invited to. And then there's also the state of the nation where people are very divided and it creates an atmosphere of anxiety because you're not sure what to say. You're not sure if you're going to offend someone and there's not a lot of unity in bringing people together and just having that peace and connectedness, which is very important for teens, especially given the turmoil that they're going through with all their hormones and everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, recent studies show that more than 1 in 3 children experience anxiety symptoms. What does that look like in real life?
There are a lot of symptoms of anxiety, and there are symptoms of anxiety that everyone knows about, and I feel like can be easily recognizable. If people have a panic attack, that's an extreme symptom of anxiety. And people know if their heart is racing really fast, that that can be a symptom of anxiety. Also, your palms sweating. But there's other not so obvious symptoms of anxiety that can creep up on teens. So if teens are often getting stomach aches or headaches, sometimes teens have trouble with digestive issues, having trouble sleeping at night because their thoughts are racing. There can also be a sense of irritability if they're having a lot of worrisome thoughts that they're not able to relax and pay attention to what they're doing. It can make them irritable because there's just so much going on in their environment with what they're thinking in their head and then the demands maybe in the classroom and the demands from their friends, that sometimes they can become irritable. And that's what I wrote about in my book. Mm-hmm. I had the main character be irritable, and that was his main symptom that was concerning to him because it was affecting his friendships. Mm.
Well, I know also sleep disruption is a common side effect. Why do you think it's such a red flag in children?
It's a red flag because it really sets you up for your next school day of not having what you need in order to be able to do your best the next school day. We know that when children sleep, that's when their brain really remembers the information that they learned the day before. It's when they grow. So it's needed for them physiologically, but it's also needed for them emotionally, because when they're overtired, when we know as adults, when we're overtired, you have less patience, you have less energy to want to do harder, challenging things, which affects them in the classroom. If they're presented with a math problem that's really challenging, and then they're tired and kind of cranky from being tired, and maybe it's gone on for a couple of days, they're just going to not be their best to be able to challenge themselves and do that hard work that's expected when you're learning new things every single day.
Well, you chose Oscar to tell your story, and he was a hardworking, high-achieving student. And anxiety often masquerades as good behavior in kids that are high-achieving, Professor Nick said. By a general rule, I would say, how should schools and families differentiate between the motivated behavior that you see in a child like Oscar and anxious compliance?
I think by checking in with your child. So it's great when kids really want to do well and they want to receive that praise and they want to have these great accomplishments. Sometimes that comes from within, and that's just something that's very important to them. But it's really important to check in with your child and have those conversations, especially if you've seen a change in their behavior, because it might be that you've had a child that has always played soccer and they've really loved soccer. And now all of a sudden, they don't want to go to soccer anymore. And you watch them at the practices and they're standing off aside from the other children. So just looking for signs from your child that maybe something used to be fun and now maybe it's too much pressure or too competitive, I think that's a really great thing for parents to look for, a great first step, because the children will show you that they are feeling the pressure. Mm-hmm. So changes in behavior is a big one. If they're nervous about doing something, if you see the physical symptoms of anxiety, it's just a prompt to have parents have these conversations with their child and say, and look for patterns. Say something like, I noticed that every time you have a math test, you seem to have to go to the nurse beforehand. Do you think you're nervous? You know, just talk through those things and make sure that there's an open environment to have these conversations with your child so that they feel comfortable sharing with you. Because it could be that it's not anxiety, but it could open the door for them to talk about another mental health struggle that they're having, or a friendship struggle, or a problem with the teacher, or, you know, Indeed. Just any kind of issue that they want to talk to you about. It's good to just really check in with your child and see if you're noticing a change in behavior or some physical symptoms that are concerning to you.
Well, when that child's anxiety becomes persistent and intense, and, you know, disruptive, do you have suggestions? How can parents or how can adults present the option of possible getting counseling without creating fear or stigma? You know, because Oscar was concerned in that way in the book, you know?
Yes, yes. And I think as parents, there's so much modeling we do. So if you as a parent are connected to your own growth and you model that for your child, I don't think that they'll be as scared to go into counseling, especially if they know that a parent has been in counseling before, or if a parent is just listening to podcasts or trying to grow as a person. I think that then that's modeled that, you know, when we have struggles, we just talk to someone or we use coping skills. But that was one of the reasons that I wrote this book, because I thought it was a really great way for parents to start this conversation with their children. Mm. Because in the book, it not only teaches about how anxiety presents, it also teaches coping strategies. So you can model these coping strategies and do these coping strategies with your child and then check in with them and say, how are you feeling? Is the anxiety feeling any better? Do you feel like you're doing a little bit better? You know, if there's a particular situation that's causing the anxiety, are you able to enjoy yourself a little bit more in that environment now? So I would say to ease into it as a parent, not just go right into, okay, it's time to go to therapy, unless it's unless it is a very severe situation, but talk to them about anxiety. Mm-hmm. Talk to them about coping skills, especially if you have coping skills you use. That's a great way to open up the conversation.
And I think, you know, presenting or using a tool of a narrative fiction helps children kind of recognize their own emotions in a non-threatening way. At least that was illustrated, again, with Oscar.
Yes, I wrote the book like that because at the time I was running a group in a high school for students who were struggling with anxiety. And I had a really great group member who modeled sharing and being vulnerable. And so she made the other group members feel comfortable. But I thought if I didn't have one of these model group members, a book is such a great way for students to take themselves out of the situation and learn from the characters and talk about the characters before they're comfortable talking about themselves. So they're taking themselves out of the situation and they're having hope for the character and wanting the character to feel better and do better and use the strategies. Mm-hmm. And then they're learning that also for themselves and applying it to their own life.
And it's important to normalize conversations, you know, about stress and yes. anxiety and depression. And I think in a narrative like that, that's what you were able to do. You know, you kind of normalized it, was, you know, and then he goes to group and he finds that, hey, there are lots of people who are going through these changes just like me, okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially with anxiety, because it is healthy to be anxious in certain mm-hmm. situations.
Exactly.
So, almost everyone's going to encounter situations that cause anxiety throughout their life. So if you normalize it and feel comfortable talking about it and then have coping strategies, then it doesn't hold kids back from going after their goals or trying for something that may feel really hard for them. So I wanted to normalize it, that it's, you know, it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to be stressed. It's okay to need strategies. And there's hope at the end of it. Just kind of work through it and do the work to feel better.
Okay. It's that time. We do need to take a brief break. I am talking about My Anxiety Messing Things Up with Jennifer Licati. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I am talking with author and counselor Jennifer Licati. She has written a book, My Anxiety is Messing Things Up. One thing I liked about your book, Jennifer, was that each chapter ended with questions and activities. How do these deepen learning and self-awareness?
I wrote the book when I was running a group at a school for students who were struggling with anxiety. And I thought the questions would be really good and the activities would be really good to help students learn from one another and talk about what they learned from the characters. And did they think the character acted appropriately in that situation? What could the character have done differently? What would you do in a situation like that? So that they are not just hearing the story and learning about what the character did, but also processing how they would handle a situation mm. like that in their future, and also learning from other classmates or group members. And it doesn't have to be used in a group forum, but if you are using it in a group forum, then the children or teens can learn from each other and learn, oh, that's a good idea. I haven't thought about dealing with it in that way, you know, because mm-hmm. kids have all different ways of dealing with these situations. Some kids are comfortable using humor. Some kids, you know, just kind of want to go within and take a couple moments before responding to something. So I thought they could learn from one another and also challenge themselves to think about the situation and prepare themselves for what they would do in their future. But if you're not using it in a group forum and you're reading it with your child, if your child is struggling with some anxiety and you want them to learn coping strategies, then you could ask the questions with your child and it can be a conversation between you and your child. And you can even talk to some of your experiences growing up and how you handled it and, you know, what you think that your child could do in the future. And maybe your child would say, no, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. But it really just does create more depth to the conversation and more understanding so that they can apply it to their future. So they're more prepared when they go out into the world and they're with their peers or with situations that cause them anxiety.
Well, do you have any favorite activities from the book that you that resonate especially well with kids?
I really like the activities where it challenges what the kids would do if they were given that situation. Like, do you think he was right? And then it's a little bit of a debate. Oh, yeah, I think he was right because of this. And no, I don't think he was right because of that. And it just, you know, like all of mental health, there's no right answer. I mean, there's some things that are obviously wrong, but there's so many right ways of dealing with something. And I feel like that's a really great way for kids to learn that. I feel like that brings more understanding to just how humans interact in general to know, well, I wouldn't feel comfortable with that. I would handle it in a different way. And to just respect others and to know that there's a lot of right ways to deal with things. There's a lot of right ways to have conversations. So I really like that because I like when people approach each other that way. So I like to do that with students and with teens also.
What do parents often misinterpret about socially anxious behavior?
I think they often misinterpret, well, there's a couple of things. I feel like there's always a question about, is a child shy versus socially uncomfortable or socially anxious? So that's one thing that I think parents sometimes struggle with. And I think the other thing that parents sometimes misunderstand or struggle with is wanting your child to feel comfortable around every single kid and thinking if they're not comfortable around every single kid, they're struggling, when that's just human nature. You're not going to click with every single person. And they, as adults, I'm sure don't click with every single person and aren't comfortable in every single situation. And sometimes you have different faces for different environments, like your work environment and how you are at home and how you are with your closest friends versus acquaintances. And I think sometimes parents forget that teens, I mean, especially teens, because they're very pretty well established in who they are, they're little people. And so it's okay for them to not feel comfortable around certain groups of kids and to respect that, to not try to push who they want them to be friendly with versus who they're actually comfortable with and who they actually connect with.
Would you share how anxiety shows up for teens in friendships, our social interactions? You know, what are the dynamics that you see among tweens and teens?
I think there's sometimes the anxiety as far as their place in the group. So that can sometimes present when they don't feel strong and comfortable with their role in their group. And then sometimes they make bad choices to try to keep their role in the group. Sometimes they talk badly about other kids in the group, or sometimes they make decisions that are not the best for them because they really desire to be in this group and they're not sure where their place is, that their place is that strong. I see that sometimes. I see sometimes children who tend to be anxious around kids, not really comfortable approaching groups of kids. And so they hold themselves back and they don't feel comfortable going after what they want. And they're nervous about being in front of the class or talking in front of the class. So, I mean, sadly, there's countless ways that anxiety can present in kids. In the book, I talked about Oscar and his anxiety presented in that he was overtired and then he would lash out at his friends because he was
Exactly.
anxious and overtired. And then that would create fights with his friends. And then he would worry about that because when you're anxious, you're going to worry about that. So maybe you lash out, but then you ruminate on it and are worried that it created a rift in the friendship. So that's what I had with Oscar. And then when he did join the group for kids who are dealing with anxiety, he created connection with a different group of kids and never told his core group of friends about joining the anxiety group, which I feel like is okay for kids to have that permission too. You don't have to share all of yourself with every single friend. It's okay to keep some things private. So that's how I had the anxiety present in the book, but there are a lot of ways that anxiety can affect kids and their social interactions and social relationships.
Well, again, a lot of kids hide their anxiety behind perfectionism. Okay,
Yes.
and people pleasing, and I think you illustrated that in Oscar's story. You want to share how you revealed this pattern of perfectionism? Because he would talk about you had him talking about, well, I try to do everything right, but I don't think it's good enough. I thought your book was very well done, and
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, I had him be very accomplished. So to everyone else, to the teachers, to his parents, to everyone, he was very accomplished. He had a brother who earned grades that were, almost perfect. So even though he was very well accomplished, he still didn't feel like he was doing enough in his parents' eyes because he wanted to be doing as well as his brother because his brother was very accomplished as a student. So there was that. And then he would, in class, he would think about his conflicts with his friends or lashing out at his friends, and then he would become distracted. So there were a lot of pieces to the anxiety because when you try to be perfect, you're never going to be perfect. So something's always going to be amiss because you can't do everything perfectly. So his mind was just always racing, always wanting everyone to think that he was doing everything amazingly. And when how he joined the group for students who are struggling with anxiety is one of his teachers noticed that he was distracted and checked in with him and said that he looked kind of worried and distracted. And he did share that with her, but initially he was so nervous that he revealed something he didn't want to reveal. He's trying to pretend he's perfect. He's trying to pretend he has it all together and was very surprised that the teacher saw that in him. And then he didn't want to join the group because he wasn't sure if it would help. He wasn't sure if it was really that big of a problem. But throughout the story, he did gain a lot of comfort from joining the group and realizing that a lot of students struggle with stress and anxiety, and learning some valuable coping skills that he can use to reduce his anxiety level. So he did end up having to say to himself, I need help with this. And his parents helped with that too, because he talked to his parents about it and they knew that he was struggling with his sleeplessness. So he did end up having to say, okay, I do need help with this. I'm going to give it a try. So that's how he showed his perfectionism throughout the book.
Well, your book frames anxiety and as, something understandable, it's manageable, rather than something to hide.
Right.
How can adults shift the broader culture narrative so that children grow up seeing emotional struggles as normal parts of being human? You know what I mean? I mean, anxiety, as we had said earlier, is normal. People become anxious about a number of things, and it's to be expected. Do you have any suggestions as to how parents can address that and help their children to understand that, hey, yeah, you're feeling anxious today, or you may have been feeling anxious for this period, But it's not the end of the world. It's not a big taboo. You know, it's a normal part of being human.
Yes, and that's why I think the modeling is so important. And I think the open conversations are so important because it is part of being human. You're not going to feel positive emotions all day, every day. That's just not the human existence. So I feel like if parents have that understanding of themselves, they model that for their child so that their child is able to say, no, I'm just tired, or no, I'm feeling anxious. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's okay. And parents should model that too. Like, oh, I'm just a little stressed with work today. It was just a little bit busy, or, you know, I had a conflict with one of my coworkers. It's going to be fine. But, you know, it was just a little bit stressful to share some of those things so that their children know, okay, this is normal to deal with things that aren't always perfect. I'm not just because you're a kid, you're not going to go to school every day and everything's going to be perfect. And it's going to, you're going to interact with all your teachers and they're going to be great. I mean, teachers are people too. So kids are going to have different connections with different teachers and maybe some teachers that won't be their favorite. And that's okay. You know, you still have to do your job as a student, just like the parents are doing their job in their workplace. So I think modeling that as a parent and talking about it and not making it taboo by talking about it. And then also letting your child share and share the small things and the big things so that they feel comfortable and they don't feel like they have to keep it all together and they have to be perfect for you. But they know that this is the safe place where they mm-hmm. can talk about things that are hard so they can go out into the world and accomplish their goals and what's important to them.
Well, I am talking with author and counselor, Jennifer Licati. Her book is My Anxiety is Messing Things Up. Jennifer, share with the listening audience where they can get this book, where they can purchase the book.
I have a website, which is www.storiesbyjennifer.com. So
wait,
that has
Slow it down.
I'm sorry.
Slow it down. You know, because someone may really want to do, some of the listening audience, you know, may want to tap into this. So share it, your website.
It's www.storiesbyjennifer.com. So that has all of my books. It has the teacher and counselor activity guides, which have the discussion questions and activities with them, and also the chapter books. So there's links on there to purchase them on Amazon or Barnes and Noble, anywhere books are sold. You can find them on Amazon. If you search my name, you can find all the books on Amazon and same on Barnes and Noble's website.
Okay, thank you. Throughout Oscar's story, we see how pressure, even positive pressure, can morph into anxiety. What does that say about the expectations that we place on children today? And how might we rethink academic and extracurricular demands?
There's a lot of pressures placed on children today. They have homework from young ages. They are involved in competitive extracurricular activities at young ages. Often they're not given the space or the freedom to try out different activities. It's like children choose that they want to participate in this one activity by second or third grade, and then their choices are made for them. So it is hard for kids because they grow and they change and they have these decisions that they've made when they were young, and maybe that doesn't feel right to them anymore. So I think that it's important as parents and educators to encourage children to continue learning about themselves and to continue exploring what they're interested in. They might not be the best at art if they're starting it maybe in 9th and 10th grade, but that doesn't mean they should be dissuaded from trying it. So I think just encouraging them to try new things can reduce some of the stress because they won't feel boxed into something that they decided a long time ago. the academics are hard because they're put on by the school. So there's not very much that parents can do about that. But if your child is struggling with their academics, parents can always contact the school and ask if there can be a reduction or a time extension. Mm-hmm. So if you are seeing your child struggle, reach out to your child's school to talk to them to see if there are any accommodations or any changes that could be made so that your child wouldn't feel so anxious and has more time to have free time and be a kid, because that's really important for their development also.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, particularly giving them time to be a kid. It seems like they are growing up so fast today. I don't know if you see that at all, but, you know, that's what I see, that they don't have time to be a kid. And I look at these kids who are in, you know, advanced programs, and they're complaining about, you know, we don't get recess. Lunch is pressured. We don't have, you know, we don't have time to do anything. And then, of course, you know, not blaming the teachers because they have to teach to the test. I mean, you know, the kids have to test out so well. So, I mean, it's like they're between the rock and the hard place.
I know. It's true. It's true. And then even if you as a parent don't want to push your child academically, they feel the pressure from the other kids. Oh, what class are you taking? And they're always comparing with each other. So it's very hard when society is telling children that they need to be taking, you know, advanced placement classes by this certain
grade. Hold your thoughts. This is one of those times. We'll get right back at you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and I am having a very informative conversation with Jennifer Licati. Jennifer, I had to interrupt you, so you want to continue your thoughts, please.
Oh, I was saying that it can be challenging for even parents who don't put those expectations on their children to achieve so much as a student and academically. Sometimes the students and the children compare themselves with the other kids. Mm-hmm. And then even though you know as a parent that it might be too much for your child is feeling the pressure to achieve as much as their friends, and they're pushing themselves into a state of anxiety or stress because of what they're taking on, just because they feel the pressure to keep up. So it can be a very challenging place for the children and the parents to be in.
Mm-hmm. In your school counseling work, what coping skills have proven to be the most effective for anxious students?
Well, I would often have anxious students come down to my office when they were in a period of time where they felt like they couldn't be around their peers. Sometimes kids with extreme anxiety will feel the anxiety and then they feel the other children looking at them, like if there's a test they have and they're very stressed out about it, and then they display that anxiety. Then they're feeling uncomfortable because all the other children saw them display that anxiety. So I would often, the main support I would have is that I would have a safe place for them to come to and to use some coping strategies before they go back to their classroom to be around their peers. So in those cases, I would have the students sometimes just do a coping strategy without even talking about anything because there was so much going on in their head. So I would have them color, or I would have them cut paper, something to just kind of get some of that energy out. But the strategies that I do tell the children to do on their own when they're feeling anxious is I talk to them about exercise. So to leave the classroom and take a walk to either use the restroom or get a drink of water just to A, get themselves out of the environment, and then also move their body. That's two ways to deal with the anxiety. They're removing themselves from the environment, so they're not in it when thinking about it while in the environment, and they're also moving their body, because exercise is a great way to deal with anxiety. I would teach the students about deep breathing techniques. Mm-hmm. So I would tell them about the five finger breathing technique, where they take five really deep breaths. And this is a really great strategy for kids. I would always tell them they don't have to just do it one time. You know, if they're in the middle of a competitive game or taking a test, they can do the deep breathing before the test. And then if they're in the middle of the test and they're starting to feel the anxiety come back up again, they can start the deep breathing again. And that's not a strategy that anyone around you is going to notice that you're doing. Right. And you can do it in almost any environment because you always have your breath. So that's one I often tell the students about. I tell them about using music, which is mostly used at home, but they could either play calming music to relax themselves, or they could use upbeat music as almost a combination of using music and exercise and just kind of dance and move their body to get some of that anxiety out. And journaling is another strategy I tell students to do to get those thoughts out of their head and just kind of be able to focus on the next day. And also the grounding technique. So I would often tell students to do the grounding techniques when they were in an environment that was causing them anxiety. And one I would often tell students to use is to look for five objects in the room in the same color, so that they would just ground themselves to where they were. And it gets them out of their head and out of thinking of their fearful thoughts, so it can't kind of spiral into like really fearful thoughts, and it gets them focused on something else so that they can feel a little bit more calm. So I kind of threw a lot at you, but those are the ones.
Those are great. No, they're okay. Fine. No, that's what, because I think the listening audience can definitely, there's something for everyone in that. Okay.
Yes.
And that's what I liked. I thought I liked the techniques that you used. My next question was, for parents, do you have any little clues that they may use in introducing mindfulness or breathing techniques to those kids who are particularly skeptical or restless? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I would tell parents to use the resources to support them, because mm-hmm. I feel like it's very easy for children to, I don't want to say not listen to their parents, but almost think, oh, you're my parents. But
exactly.
If you're using a book, like my book, or if you're using, you could even Google like YouTube videos on deep breathing exercises, and show your children all these videos and say, there's so many videos on deep breathing techniques because they work. That's why there's so many videos. People use them. There wouldn't be these videos if people didn't need them and people didn't use them and reference them during times of stress. So I would use the resources to support what you're trying to teach to your child, and then just keep modeling it for your child to say, okay, you seem stressed. Let's take a minute and let's do some deep breathing exercises. And also recognize that not every coping strategy is going to feel right for every child or every adult too. So if your child really doesn't like deep breathing exercises, have them do a quick exercise to move their body, either 10 jumping jacks or, wall push-ups, something like that. Try a couple of different strategies and tell them it's okay if you don't like deep breathing, but you have to use a strategy to feel better when you're feeling anxious. That it's important to have something you can go to reduce your anxiety so that you can perform your best and it doesn't hold you back from doing the things you want to do. So I would tell the parents to use the resources, and then also have understanding that the first resource that you try with your child might not be the one that they love, and that's okay. And have that understanding with your child. And then also just model it for your child during the times of stress so that they can remember to do that.
Do you have any small kind of everyday habits that parents can build at home to kind of reduce anxiety?
Yes, I feel like having a time where you talk to your child and ask them about their day. If there's something that your child loves, like being creative is a way to reduce anxiety. And it doesn't just have to be, you know, painting or drawing. It could be playing music. It could be dancing. It could be reading a book. Any of those creative outlets, if your child really enjoys that, carving out a time each day for them to do that will reduce their anxiety. And if it's something they really enjoy, it'll also bring joy into their life, which will also make them less anxious and less pessimistic about all the little tasks they have to do as a kid with the homework and getting up at a certain time and going to bed at a certain time. So I feel like that's a really great way to add joy. And if they're open to journaling or talking about their day, I think that that really reduces anxiety to share what happened and to share how they're feeling so that they're not shouldering it all alone. And maybe some days they won't have anything to tell you, but maybe other days they will. And it's important to just keep that communication open so that they do feel comfortable talking to you, especially if they have a day that's very challenging, but just in general to get some of their worries out or some things that happen that maybe they're questioning if they interpreted it right or if they should have their feelings hurt by it or, you know, and you can give your perspective on what you think and how some suggestions on how you might handle it. So that's what I would suggest to parents.
Well, looking at the schools, if you could reimagine the ideal school environment for anxious or emotionally sensitive kids, what would it look like? And what small realistic step, I mean, would you suggest that schools can begin to take right now?
I think having more mental health education in the schools is very important. I think there are some teachers who model their mental health struggles, and not in an inappropriate way, but they will model saying, you know, I have ADHD and this is what I do, or my ADHD brain thinks this way. And sometimes they do it in a silly way, but they're still sharing. And I feel like if educators all had that feeling about themselves where they weren't trying to be perfect, and they were also trying to use their platform to let children know, just because you have this struggle does not mean you're not going to be successful. It does not mean there's not a place for you in the world. There's so many different avenues that kids can go into. It's not just carved out for the top 5% of each graduating class. They're the only ones who can be happy and successful. And I feel like if teachers had more of that mindset, and some of them do a really great job, but I just think it would be so great if they all had that mindset of modeling some struggles, modeling that there's different ways to learn material. Like if you want to learn material by creating a collage and writing a little piece about it, and someone else wants to write a paper and someone else wants to give a presentation, those kinds of things I think would go a long way in children understanding that everyone has strengths. And, I don't want to give a presentation, but you know what? I can make a collage that's going to look great, and I'm still learning the information. I would love to see more of that in the schools.
Well, again, I just loved your book, and I think your story gives children accessible strategies for self-regulation, okay? Which of these strategies tend to be the most transformative for kids once they start using them, you know? Because Oscar, after he got those strategies. He kept using them even after the group was over. So do you have any of those strategies that you thought were the most transformative and that kids would continue to really use them once they got a good grasp on them?
The most transformative strategy, I believe, is journaling, because I feel like if children will actually give themselves time to do it, it helps them to understand how they're feeling about what happens, because sometimes there'll be a social situation that will happen and they'll feel negative about it, but they're not really sure why they feel negative, and they're not really sure what negative feeling it is. Is it frustration? Is it judgment? Is it hopelessness? Is it, you know, there's all these feelings that it could be. And sometimes they just don't take the time to think through, like, well, why did that situation bother me? And why did I feel so bad, you know, for a couple hours afterwards? So I think journaling is really great for that, for understanding yourself better, and also for getting your thoughts out, so that then you can have a good night's sleep, because sometimes those thoughts are still racing and you haven't kind of closed the loop on them. So they're still in your head and they're playing over and over. And like, if I would have said, if I would have done this, or if I would have said this, and if they can get that on paper, I feel like that would do a world of good with helping to decrease their anxiety. So that one I really, really love. I think that's hard for children to connect to that and commit to that, because it might feel a little bit like schoolwork for kids that don't love writing, but it's so beneficial. And then the other ones that I really like are exercise, because we know as adults, if we move our body every day, it just reduces our level of anxiety in our body, so that we're just at a more healthy level of anxiety, so that it doesn't spike, just to kind of decrease it. So I feel like if kids would move their body and exercise every day, and exercise in a fun way, they're kids, so they can do all kinds of things to exercise. They can just go shoot the basketball, or, you know, play around with their friends outside. It's not like they have to go to the gym or do these hard, intensive workouts. And then the other really great piece is the deep breaths. I feel like if kids have deep breaths as a strategy, they can use it in a situation that causes them anxiety immediately, and it will immediately cause their body to relax and handle the situation better. So I really like those three. Those are the ones that I would love for teens to use.
Well, in these last 2 minutes, I have one. Of course, I have a lot more questions, but I can't present them now. But what has been the most surprising or moving, should I say, feedback you've received from young readers? I mean, what did it show you about how kids experience anxiety today?
The most moving feedback is the children who it helped them to not feel alone. So that is sad to me, because I feel like we've done a really great job as a society to talk about mental health and to keep it in the forefront, but they still look at the other kids and think that they have it all figured out and they're the only ones struggling with anxiety. And so that really struck me. And then also the way that the anxiety attack or panic attack was described in the book, that a student or a child said that that was really how they felt. And it really help to describe how they're feeling in those situations. So those are the most positive feedback that I got that really stuck with me, because I do want children and teens to know that they're not alone, that everyone deals with anxiety from time to time. And some people it's more problematic, and maybe it's, maybe you'll want to see a therapist or maybe have other strategies to help with that. But all of us would benefit from having coping strategies and recognizing symptoms of anxiety, so we can intervene when it first starts, so that we can bring ourselves to a more healthy, comfortable level.
any brief message, 30-second message, that you'd like to send to kids who feel like anxiety is messing things up?
The message I want to give them is, just like in the book, there is hope. So if you use the strategies and you do the work of mental health, you can feel better. There's hope for whatever situation you're in. There are strategies, there's resources. If your issue isn't anxiety, there's books and resources and coping strategies for any mental health struggle that you're dealing with. So just don't be afraid to talk about it and reach out to the adults in your life that care for support.
Well, it's time out for this edition of 411 Teen. As anxiety continues to rise among our youth, resources like this book remind us that kids are not alone and neither are the adults supporting them. Jennifer Licati, thank you for your insight and compassion. And to my listening audience, much appreciation for the privilege of your time and ear. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, inviting you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. If you would like to participate in the 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Teen at wfsu.org.